To an explosive emotional force. The nation had been carried away by the enthusiasm known as the New Imperialism, an expansionist, sensational concept of empire which exactly fitted the spirit of the 90s. Recalled now from the grand junction of the Jubilee, the separate lines of the Victorian story seemed to have been leading the British inexorably towards the suzerainty of the world. The methodical distribution of their systems, their values, their power and their stock across the continents. Many and varied energies had swept the British to this meridian. Impulses shoddy and honourable, pagan and pious, had turned them into imperialists, a word which had itself shifted its value from the dubiously pejorative to the almost unarguably proper. First, there was simply the wealth, vigour and inventiveness of Victorian Britain, a dynamic state in an age of excitement. Capital looking for markets, vitality looking for opportunity, success looking for new fields. Then a succession of disparate prophets, from Jeremy Bentham and Tennyson to Disraeli and Cardinal Newman, had excited the instincts of the people for space, power and sacramental dazzle. Darwin, a half-understood household sage, seemed to have demonstrated that some races, like some animals, were more efficiently evolved than others, and had a right to leadership and possession. The evangelical movement had drawn attention to the plight of the ignorant heathen of the tropics, only awaiting redemption. Among the gentry, Dr. Arnold and his reformers of the public schools had implanted concepts of privileged service that led logically to the idea of a new Rome. The new penny press, led by the brilliantly boastful Daily Mail, the embodiment and mouthpiece of the imperial idea, assiduously fanned the aggressive patriotism of the people. To the innocent public, everything seemed to be going right. The monarchy was more popular than ever. The prestige of the Royal Navy had reached an almost mystical plane. The spectacle of other peoples coalescing in powerful federations, in Germany, in Italy, in America, made the British wonder if they might not also combine their scattered communities all over the world into an unapproachable superstate. Jingo imperialism was intoxicating fodder for the newly enfranchised working classes, and the conservative unionist government was dominated by imperialists of complementary styles. Lord Salisbury, the Prime Minister, stroking the surface of affairs with his patrician and scholarly hand. Joseph Chamberlain, the colonial secretary, an expansionist of the new kind, impulsive and insatiable, who had even gone so far as to install electric light in the colonial office. It all went with an almost frantic gusto, like universal craze. Among the better informed, doubts also played their part. Complete though...